Best we eat as large a breakfast as we can manage. Never know what's going to go down, and when we might get another chance of a good meal. Not that Jack needed any urging to revisit the serve-yourself buffet.
Yeah, no problem.
Just don't eat too much, Jack.
Still got a couple small gaps there to fill up nicely, some fresh fruit salad.
Just don't make yourself sick.
Christy dabbed at her lips with a linen napkin.
Think that all this could be mind games, lover?
You mean that the Magus and Wolfram don't actually intend to do anything hostile? Just scare the shit out of us?
Yeah.
Ryan contemplatively rubbed his finger down his chin.
No. No, I don't think so.
The elements were combining against the Golden Eagle. After the violent storm, they now encountered a dense fog that had come drifting out from the forest to the east, layering itself over the sullen waters of the Sippy. Ryan and the others stood on their section of deck, leaning on the cold, wet iron rail, watching as the banks disappeared from sight. Captain Houston had immediately slowed the paddle wheel, dropping the speed of the huge vessel to a bare walking pace, and he put a leadsman into the blunt bow, reading the depth of the water beneath the shallow keel. The sailor heaved the weighted line out ahead of the slow-moving boat.
By the mark, twain! Course said!
The captain stood huddled in a dark blue pea jacket on the bridge. Mildred had her arm around JB, her braided hair glistening with the crystals of mist.
One of the first things I remember when I started schooling is learning that the writer, Mark Twain, took his pen name from working on riverboats. I never thought that I'd ever ride one and hear them calling out the depths like this.
I might be in error, but it seems to me that the vaporous murk is becoming thicker. I can no longer make out the line of the shore on this starboard side.
And we're slowing down more. Paddle wheels hardly turning at all.
One of the officers was passing by.
It's a hurricane, man. Something as bad as that can change the course and shape and depth of the Sippy and make all the charts out of date and useless. Captain has to feel his way along or risk running her aground.
What's that? Sounds like a powerful engine.
Everyone listened, but the sound, if it had been there in the first place, wasn't repeated.
Away, you rolling river. Not that you can possibly locate the damned river with this fog. The way it progresses, you won't be able to see a hand in front of your foot.
What?
I said you would shortly be unable to make out your knee in front of your ears. No, I'm getting fearfully confused. What an addled brain I have become. One will not see one's hand in front of one's face, that is it.
One of the crew of the Golden Eagle had been working at the davits of a lifeboat, slung close to where Ryan and the others had been standing. Now the man was almost invisible in the fog. Ryan turned and found the man was staring at him, his hammer poised. Christy sensed something wasn't right and also turned.
What is it, lover?
I think that man's been put there to watch us. Could be in Wolfram's pay.
Sure you aren't getting paranoid?
Maybe. When you're dealing with people like the Magus and Wolfram, then a touch of paranoia isn't a bad idea.
The ornate boat was barely crawling along. The banks were totally invisible. But it hadn't made any difference to the gamblers. The little old ladies with gloved hands still battled endlessly with the fruit machines. Roulette wheels spun, and the croupiers carried out their business with the solemn reverence of acolytes, worshipping at the shrine of the great god, Chance. The air was thick with expensive cigar smoke, reeking with a scent of brandy and whiskey. Outside on the slippery decks, the long rows of multicolored lights that draped the vessel glowed dimly through the mist, showing the diminishing outline of the Golden Eagle. A pair of officers came in from the fog, both saluting smartly.
Ryan Carter?
Yes.
The taller of the men had a long, drooping mustache that was dripping with water from the mist.
We have a problem, and Captain Houston wondered whether you and your companion, John Diggs, might be able to help us.
Problem? What kind of problem are we talking about?
Best the skipper tells you himself, but it could involve some shooting.
Ryan laid his right hand on the butt of the Sig Sauer. We're ready.
Sure are.
JB showed the Uzi to the two officers.
I come.
We can all come.
Captain said he didn't want to start a panic. Ask if just the two of you could come. Might need the rest of you later.
Ryan considered the request. His first thought was that it might be part of some dark plan of the Magus and Wolfram, but it didn't seem likely. He would back himself and JB against any Sekhmen ambush they might try. He turned to the others. We'll be back soon. Go straight down to our cabin and keep the doors bolted.
I don't like this, Lover. I got a bad feeling.
Gotta take some chances. They could have killed us any time before we knew they were aboard.
Quick as you can, sir.
The mustached officer glanced at a gleaming silver half-hunter that dangled from a chain across his midriff. Don't forget, keep the bolts across the doors. If we aren't back in 60 minutes from now, come
on. No harm will come to you or your friend, sir. I reckon we can more or less guarantee that.
Glad to hear it. Ryan held Christie's hand for a moment.
Take care, John.
Yeah.
The two old friends followed the sailors outside, vanishing into the mist. JB was alongside Ryan.
You sure about this, compadre?
We're ready for anything they might try.
Guess so.
One of the officers turned to make sure they were following him, smiling encouragingly. A set of iron stairs loomed out of the swirling mist ahead of them, and they climbed to a higher deck, continuing toward the high bridge. The Sekmen were waiting patiently in the shadows of the deck as Christie led the others toward their cabins, all holding cocked automatics.
Got your code.
Jack stepped back and drew his magnum, but was immediately clubbed from behind. He fell unconscious at the feet of his attacker.
Don't nobody else try to get fucking triple stoop, and you all stay living and unhurt. Pick up the kid.
He's not a kid.
Don't give a fuck, Christie. Keep your hands high while we take away the blasters. And move on around the back of the boat to the left side.
The port.
That's so. Best keep your flaps shut, Doc. You'll be on the deck with the kid. Get their guns.
The guns were removed with professional ease, though Christie noticed that they had missed some of Jack's knives, and they ignored Doc's sword stick.
Move it!
You could die for it. Never hit us in this fog.
Shut the fuck up, you black bitch!
What?!
Mildred turned instantly on the man, and he backed away from the flaming anger in her face, even though he was the one holding the gun. Christie thought about Mildred's suggestion and dismissed it. Jack wasn't a strong swimmer, nor was Doc, and they could easily get lost in the mist, in a river that was at least a half mile wide. It wasn't a gamble worth the taking. She laid a hand on Mildred's arm, calming her.
Later.
They moved around the stern of the vessel, along the port side, where Christie saw a boat waiting, with a double outboard engine tied to the lower gangway. It began to look as if they were victims of a complex conspiracy that probably involved Captain Houston and some of his crew. Three more armed men were already in the boat, one holding the tiller. The leader of the set group gestured to Christie, Mildred, and Doc.
Down the ladder and into the boat, quick and easy. And if you make a break, the others die that moment.
Jack was dumped to the bottom of the boat. Christie stood in the stern, peering up toward the dim spot of golden light that was the bridge of the stern wheeler, wondering if Ryan was there, if Ryan was still living.
Gaia, help us.
She watched the golden eagle vanish behind her.
She stopped. Feel a vibration. Paddle's not turning.
The sun was veiled, and the morning was as dark as late evening. It was also bitterly cold, and Ryan decided that he might go down and indulge in a brandy once they'd finished with whatever it was that Captain Houston wanted from them. He hurried along the deck, his shoulders hunched against the cold.
Nearly there, sir. One more lot of steps.
The higher they went, the thicker grew the fog. Ryan remembered Doc saying something about not being able to see your hand in front of your face. It was very nearly true.
In here.
The officer stepped aside from the half-glass door onto the control area of the Golden Eagle. It was flooded with light from several oil lamps, and Ryan and JB blinked, dazzled by the brightness. They were able to make out the stocky figure of Captain Houston, gold braid glinting on his uniform. He was standing by the sailor at the huge wheel. But there were other people standing on the bridge of the stern wheeler. One was enormously fat, another skinny with metallic gloves. A cruel smile slashed across his reconstructed face, and three or four Sekmen, all with drawn and cocked weapons. Ryan felt his heart sink. It was a trap after all, though he couldn't quite see the scope of his enemy's plan yet. He was aware of JB tensing at his side.
A hasty action would be regretted by everyone, John Dix, and would mean the deaths of your friends.
Your absent friends.